Good morning. It is a real privilege to share with you this morning, here in person and online. We're continuing our series on words of wisdom from the book of Proverbs, and so today, living a productive life. Now, that title just terrified a lot of you, didn't it? Because I know that you are already overworked, overproductive, and so I'm not going to be your cruise director for a guilt trip. I'm not going to tell you to work harder. I'm not going to tell you to just do it. Most of you are already overworked, overcommitted, and I expect a lot of you, your default setting is tired. So I'm going to give you some practical tools for working less today and enjoying life more, and I'm going to suggest that you just don't do it. So I was given the topic of procrastination. I'm not sure why. I keep thinking I ought to ask Matthew, but I never get around to it. So we all procrastinate. And so this is the audience participation part of the program. What are some things that you procrastinate? What are some things that you put off?
Losing weight.
Losing weight, okay. Anybody else want to be honest?
Housework.
Housework, okay.
Homework.
All right, Colin. Yeah, it's my favorite thing to do in school. Exercise. Okay. Very, very good. So we all procrastinate. But here's the problem. Procrastination is the enemy of productivity. Here's why. Productivity does not mean that you're working harder. It means doing what God has designed you to do in the most effective, efficient way possible. And so procrastination actually makes work harder. And it makes life harder. It promises to lessen pressure. Well, I'll do it later. I'll do it when I get around to it. I've got plenty of time. But here's the problem. Procrastination actually increases and compresses the pressure in our lives. You burn up a lot of good energy procrastinating. You burn up emotional energy. You burn up emotional energy by simply not doing it. And the idea that I work best under pressure, that may work for college students. But really, pressure takes the edge off our life. We are no longer sharp and acute in our thinking when we're procrastinating, when we're under pressure. So we're going to look at some very practical ways this morning of how you can release that pressure, how you can live in the freedom of doing those things God has designed you to do. Because procrastination costs you and me God's best. Let me repeat that. Procrastination costs you and me God's best. We're going to take a look at Proverbs 6 this morning. It's on your screen. Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. That's Proverbs 6:6. So what can we learn from ants? Well, ants are one of the few non-mammals that actually specialize in life. Like bees, they specialize in foraging for food, for caring for the nest, for raising their young. And they actually learn what they're good at by doing it. And if you're a total failure at foraging for food, then you get to clean the nest. So ants are industrious little critters. And so our first point this morning from the ant is to discover your purpose. What can you contribute to this ant colony called Earth? When I was a youth pastor at college church down the road, I had a parade of students, especially second semester sophomores, who had stopped by my office with absolute terror in their voice, saying, I don't know what to major in. I don't know what to do with my life. And so I created this PAT answer, P-A-T answer. Passion plus affirmation plus talents equal purpose. So ask yourself, what is your passion? What are you passionate, zealous, absolutely nuts about? You've probably got several passions in your life. Might be sports, might be music, might be playing Candy Crush. Those may or may not be your purpose in life because you need to run it through two more filters. Affirmation. For what things are you being affirmed, praised, and complimented? I mean, you may have a passion for sports, but if you're always picked last, probably that's not your purpose. Now, I can tell you this morning, I was never, ever picked last for sports. Every single team, I was never, ever picked last. That's because in my grade, there was a kid in a wheelchair. So I was always picked second to the last. And fortunately, I had some youth leaders and some teachers in my life that said, Jim, you can write. Jim, you can speak. Jim, you can sing. And so one of my greatest joys of being an author and speaking at a lot of writers' conferences and teaching writing at that other university in Grant County is being able to say, you can write. You have got talent. And that's the third qualification, is talent. What do you do well, have a talent for, excel in? Now, when I was born, I was so skinny. How skinny was I? I was so skinny, the doctor tied me in a knot and spanked my umbilical cord. So, seriously, I bought my clothes at the boys' department at Sears. I mean, I did not do well in sports. But I did do well in high school journalism. I became the editor of the newspaper in college. I did well in music and speaking. I ended up on a traveling team for Indiana Wesleyan University. Actually, I really got on the team because Lois Farah was on the team, and I wanted to spend as much time with Lois Farah as possible. And eventually, she changed her name to Watkins. But what are your talents? What are those things that God has uniquely qualified you to do? So in the Venn diagram of life, take your passion, take your affirmation, take your talent, and that little area where it all comes together and overlaps, that is going to be your purpose. So I want you to take a moment to think, what are my passions? What are my affirmations? And what are my talents? I'll check my email while you do that. So, no, seriously, I want you to think about that. What is my passion? What's my affirmation? What's my talent? So to be a productive person, you've got to know what your purpose is. Solomon had a very specific purpose for writing the book of Proverbs. Look at the first chapter. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, David's son, king of Israel. Their purpose is to teach people wisdom and discipline, to help them understand the insights of the wise. Their purpose is to teach people to live disciplined and successful lives, to help them do what is right, just, and fair. That's Proverbs 1:1-3. So know your purpose in life. That's why I would suggest that every person has a mission statement. I mean, that sounds so anal retentive, control freak, type A person. But I think everybody needs a mission statement because that justifies your carbon footprint. Why should you be allowed to suck in oxygen and blow out carbon dioxide? Why should you take up space on this crowded planet? It's because God has given me a purpose. And that purpose is your mission statement. Everybody's going to have a different mission statement depending on the unique gifts that God has given you. Mine is to communicate the gospel of Christ in as effective and creative manner with as many people as possible. It's the specific way in which you are going to live out your purpose. And the great thing about mission statements is they keep you on that unique path that God has designed you. Again, take a look at Solomon. He writes in Proverbs 4:25-26, look straight ahead. Fix your eyes on what lies before you. Make out straight paths for your feet. Stay on the safe path. Don't get sidetracked. Keep your feet from following evil. Now, one of my dad's favorite sayings, he was his own tweeter. He was always tweeting things like, don't pee on an electric fence, always put God first, and plow a straight line. That was one of his mantras. And being a Gentile family, we didn't have a bar mitzvah at 12, but we did have a rite of passage into manhood. At 12 years old, we could drive the farm tractor. This wasn't my little wimpy John Deere riding mower. This was a big, powerful farm tractor. And at 12, you could drive the farm tractor. So, one of our projects was plowing a straight line, plowing a straight furrow. And what you would do is you would take the upright exhaust pipe on that Alice Chalmers B, and you'd line it up with a distant object. And you would stare at it. You would look at it. You would not deviate one percentage, 1 degree. And so you kept that exhaust pipe and that distant object lined up. You just kept glaring at it. You didn't take your eyes off it. You didn't glance to the right or the left. You just zeroed in on that. And I got so I could really plow a straight furrow. And now I pride myself as having the straightest mower tracks in my neighborhood, because I'm good at that, at keeping a focus on a distant object. And that's great advice for life. Your mission statement is that distant object out there that you line your life up with and you keep straight, not diverting, straight ahead. Now, you need to make them broad enough that God will allow, so God can use you in, if you have multiple talents. But you need to make it narrow enough, too, that you don't get distracted by just the millions of other things you could be doing. So, what is your purpose? What is your purpose? Back to our ants in Proverbs 6. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work. That's 6:7. So, number two is to live out your priorities. Adults pretty much set their own priorities. If you don't, someone or something else is going to set them for you. And that's the nice thing about having a mission statement, because it keeps you on track. I would highly recommend Stephen Covey's book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Covey suggests there are four forces that influence our lives, and they're on the screen. They are urgent and important, urgent but not important, not urgent but important, and not urgent and not important. So every day we have to decide which of these four forces are we going to allow to direct our lives. So here's another part of the audience participation program, part of the program. What are some things that are urgent and important? Things that are urgent and important. Pardon me? Eating. Very important. Pardon me? Pay your bills. Yeah, the bank just kind of frowns on not doing that, don't they? Fire alarms, that's another one. You know, there, if the fire alarm goes off, we're out the door. There are four exits clearly marked, one in the north, one in the west, one in the south, and one in the east. Keep in mind the nearest exit may be behind you. So urgent and important. Then there are things that are urgent but not important. What would those be? Things that are urgent but not important. Whoa, I hope you have a comfortable couch, Gary. Urgent but not important. Anybody? How about phone calls? There's a sense of urgency when that phone goes off to answer it. Texts are urgent, but you know, a lot of times they're really not that important. How about not urgent but important? That would be Gary's. Be nice to your wife, okay? It's not urgent, but it's incredibly important. Anybody? What's something else that's not urgent, but incredibly important? How about taking a shower? Especially important to the person sitting next to you. And then there are the not urgent and not important. Now, I am so tempted to pull the bus off the side of the road and go off on a rant. We had a bus driver that about once a month, he would just have it with us. He'd pull the bus off the side of the road and just ream us out. So I'm really tempted to go off on not urgent, not important. But let's just say, as far as I'm concerned, the ultimate failure is succeeding at something that has no eternal value. The ultimate failure is succeeding at something that has no eternal value. Now, Covey says the most important time we spend is in the not urgent and important section, the not urgent but important. I think there are two that I want to just kind of tap into this morning. Number one is time alone with God. That has got to be the Christian's number one priority, or everything else just falls apart. And here's the reality. You will never, ever find time for time alone with God. You have got to make time for that. And so one of the biggest impacts in my life, the biggest memory in my life, is every morning coming down from school, coming downstairs to get ready for school at 6:30, there would be my dad reading his Bible, sitting at the kitchen table. Now, he had a full-time factory job. He worked at Kellogg's of Battle Creek. He had a wife. He had two boys. Plus, he volunteered as a lay pastor at our church. And so he really didn't have time for time alone with God. And maybe you're thinking, I don't have time for time alone with God. But he made time. That hour between 6 and 6:30 before he headed off to work at 7 was time alone with God. And you know what? Where will you find me at 6:30? If you drop by my house at 6:30 tomorrow, you'll find me in the recliner with my laptop, opened up to Bible Gateway. Okay, a little bit of different technology, King James Version in paper, Bible Gateway, New Living Translation. But that is important to me. And if I can be have the worst schedule for that day. I mean, my to-do list is exploding. But if I don't have that time alone with God, everything else, it just falls apart. So, time alone with God. Secondly, is time with family. I quit my job as editorial director at Wesleyan Publishing House back in 1988 because it was demanding way too much time, too much travel. I was gone nearly every weekend. I was out speaking at conferences that the denomination was presenting. And I finally told my boss, look, there are hundreds and hundreds of good speakers, but there is only my wife has only one husband. My kids have one dad. And I've never, ever regretted that decision. I love writing. I love speaking. I love making money doing those things. But I love God, my wife, my two adult children, and my five adorable grandchildren so much more. And prayerfully, I'm never, ever going to have to die and say, be on my deathbed and say, man, wish I spent more time with God and my family. So what are your priorities? Let me suggest that you spend quality time in those areas that are not urgent. Nobody's going to yell at you if you don't have your time alone with God. Nobody's going to yell at you and send you a pink slip or an overdue bill if you don't have time with your family. Those are not urgent, but they are incredibly important. So Covey says, spend most of your time, your energies, in those things that are not urgent, but just incredibly, incredibly important. So what are your priorities? Are you going to be able to say, I spent my life doing what was most important, not the things that are most urgent? So back to our proverbial ants. They labor hard all summer gathering food for the winter. That's 6:8. So number three is live a productive life. And throughout Proverbs, we find that theme running over and over and over again. On your screen, work brings profit, but mere talk leads to poverty. That's 23:14. Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. That's 21:5. And then 21:25, despite their desires, the lazy will come to ruin, for their hands refuse to work. I just love how practical, how incredibly practical the Proverbs are. So I want to give you some very practical ways to be productive. And if you'll apply these four D's, there's a four D's on your program there, you will not work harder. And again, I don't want to be your tour guide for a guilt trip. I know you are working beyond hard, but you will not work harder, but you will produce more if you simply don't. Don't is the first D. Instead of Nike's just do it, I would suggest just don't do it. If it's not part of your mission statement, if it's not part of your purpose, then you don't have to do it. Isn't that great news? You can say don't. If it's not part of your mission statement, don't do it. For several years, the district nominating committee kept asking me to run for district board of administration. And if you know me, I spell board B-O-R-E-D, board. Now, not my purpose. And I'm glad, if you have the gift of administration, if you're serving on the leadership team here at the church, I admire you for having the gift of administration. But it is not my passion. It is not something that I'm affirmed for. It's definitely not my talent. So it was an hour and a half drive from our church north of Fort Wayne down to the Marion office. So 2 ways, 3 hours. Average meeting lasted 3 to 4 hours, so let's call it 3.5. Met once a month. So that is 36 hours of driving, 42 hours of being bored. But by simply saying, you know, thanks for asking. You know, that's an honor. I appreciate that. But, you know, no. So if it's not part of your purpose, your passion, your affirmation, your talents, follow the anti-drug mantra and don't do it. Just say no. So let's practice together. I want you to take a deep breath and then breathe out no. Let's try it together. No. Try it again. No. Isn't that wonderful? In just that split second, you can save hundreds of hours by simply saying no to those things that are not a part of your purpose. Even when one of the pastoral staffs asks you to do something, first ask, is this God's purpose for me? Is it on my mission statement? If it is not, Pastor Matthew, Pastor Matt, Pastor Noel will say, that's fine. I want you to stay in your area of gifting. So don't do it. Number two, or second D, is delegate. If someone else can do it better, then they should do it. Last time I spoke, we looked at the parts of the body of Christ and how they all work together, and each part fulfills its purpose. You cannot see out your ear, or hear with your nose, or smell with your feet. Well, feet can smell, but that's a different use of the word. But don't do those things God has not created you to do, and that will save you hundreds of hours. Now, there are some things you have to do. You have to change diapers. You have to take out the trash. You have to file income taxes. But in the big things in life, the things that really matter, the things that are really important, stick to your purpose. So if you're asked to do something and someone else can do it, let them. Back in the 80s, when I was a work-at-home dad, writing and editing, and Lois was in seminary getting her MDiv, Faith was 9, Paul was 5, and they did a great job of pitching in with chores. So I think one of the most important parenting lessons you can give, as well as theological and moral teachings, is how to use the microwave, how to use the vacuum cleaner, and how to use the washing machine. Now, the worst thing that can happen is you end up with pink underwear. But teach your kids how to do chores. Delegate, delegate, delegate. And then the third D is to delay. Now, I know you're thinking, this crazy man, he's been telling us that procrastination is bad, and now he's talking about procrastination. Well, there are some real advantages to delaying a task or project. Number one, by delaying, you may not have to do it at all. That big project at work may get canceled. There may be changes in your health that don't allow you to do that. Jesus could return. That's my favorite for delaying. And wouldn't you feel silly if you spent weeks in advance planning on something that was going to be canceled or changed or raptured? Now, I knew I was speaking on procrastination 3 months ago, but I didn't start prepping 3 months ago, just in case Jesus did show up. But I kept thinking, and after watching the news this week, I was thinking, maybe I should have waited until last night to start on this message, because I wouldn't be surprised if Jesus returns right now. I mean, look at Israel, look at Iran, look at Syria, look at Sudan. I mean, there are wars and rumors of wars happening. So maybe Jesus will show up and I don't have to do it. So number one, delay, because you may not have to do it at all. Number two, by delaying, your subconscious has time to work on that task. Now, as a 115-pound, 115-pound college student, I had to choose a career working with my brain and not my body. So if you have a job that involves creating and planning and accomplishing mental tasks, by delaying, this is a wonderful trick. Your subconscious has time to work on that task. When I have a deadline coming up, that creative little muse inside my head gets to work on it. Now, I've started calling it a muse rather than the voices in my head, because people started staring at me, and muses sounds far less psychotic. So, but we do have that muse, that self-conscious part of our mind that gets to work on the project right away. And it's amazing and sometimes frightening the work our subconscious can produce when given enough time. So when I sit down to work on the project, my muse has had months and months to work on it, and it's just amazing the stuff that just kind of pours out. And here's another important reason to delay. By delaying, you avoid wasting time. A one-time management principle says, work expands to fill the time allotted, and that is so true. If you have 1 hour to write to a friend, you're going to spend 60 minutes writing a long letter to your friend. If you have 30 minutes to write to your friend, you're going to email them, and it's going to take you 30 minutes to write that email. If you have 1 minute to write to your friend, you're going to have 1 minute to do it as you text it. And so the work expands to fill the time allotted. This is especially true for meetings. At a certain church here in town, we won't mention names, and it wasn't College Church, it was another church. At a certain church in town, our board meetings started at 6, but they had no cutoff time. And so they would go after 10 o'clock almost every board meeting. Now, at the church Lois and I pastored, We had our board meetings Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m. And we knew that at 6 p.m., this was a traditional church. Can you imagine me and Lois in a traditional church? But it was a very traditional church, so we had 6 o'clock service. And it was just amazing. Start at 4, you've got a 6 o'clock deadline. Our board meetings lasted 2 hours. Not a minute shorter, not a minute longer. They lasted 2 hours. So by delaying, you compress that time you have to work on it so you don't spend your time just frittering around and tweaking and, you know, doing stuff like that. So I'm a big believer in delaying, but that is not the same as procrastination. For instance, if I have a big writing or editing project, I'll estimate how many hours it'll take, how much research I'll need to do, how much time it's going to take to write it, how much time to let it set, and then to come back to it with fresh eyes. So, for instance, Pastor Matthew assigned us our speaking things back in May, but I didn't start seriously working on it until my flight to Atlanta last week. And suddenly all that musing that I've been subconsciously thinking about just came pouring out. I mean, my fingers were dancing on the keyboard. And by the time I needed to make sure my tray table and seat were in the full upright locked position, I had the rough draft because I'd allowed my muse to work on that. So if you work with your brain, try that. Just tell your muse, no, get back to me in 2 weeks, or get back to me in a month, and we'll talk about it. But you just keep working on it in the background. And it's just amazing. So, delay. If you can't not do it, you can't delegate it, you can't delay it another minute, then go ahead and do it. So what's our takeaway this morning? Number one, discover your purpose for which God has uniquely designed you. Where do your passion and your affirmation and your talent overlap? And that little overlap there, that's going to be your talent. That's my pat answer, passion, affirmation, and talent. And then write a mission statement that reflects it. I know that sounds so cerebral, but you know what? Mission statements keep you on track. It keeps you on that path that God has called you to. I love the way that Eugene Peterson paraphrases Christ's command in Matthew 11 about taking up your yoke. He says, "Are you tired, worn out?" Anybody tired and worn out here this morning? "Are you tired and worn out? Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." See, I'm convinced the reason so many people are tired and worn out is they're trying to do things they never were designed to do. And you're going to have to work twice as hard doing those things that you are not designed to do, that don't fit your purpose. And this doesn't just apply to our physical lives or our family lives or our work lives. They appear to apply to us spiritually. Because God's purpose is for you to live a holy life. And that means getting rid of sin. That is going to be the thing that weighs you down. Now, sin is not always bank robbery and, you know, murder and mayhem, that sort of thing. It's simply anything that's not motivated by God's love for people is sin. Anything that's not motivated by God's love for him and for people is sin. And so if you're carrying around that sin, that's not your purpose. You were designed to live a holy life. And one of the ways to get rid of that burden is to repent, to turn away, and live a godly life. And keep the words of Jesus in mind, as the message says, "Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." You can do that if you're living your life on purpose. Number two, live out your priorities. Spend the majority of your time in those areas that are not urgent, but important. And try to get rid of everything you possibly can that's not urgent and not important. And then to live a productive life. Don't do those things you're not supposed to do. Delegate as much as you can, delay as long as you can, and then if you absolutely must, no one else can or will do it, the deadline is looming, then do it. And in so doing, you're going to live out Proverbs' mission statement, Proverbs 1:3. So live disciplined and successful lives. Let me conclude with Jesus' invitation in Matthew 11, 28, 30. This is from the New Living Amplified Paraphrase King James Watkins Version. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my purpose upon you. Let me teach you true priorities so you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and my burden I give you is light, for it leads to a productive life. Let's pray. Jesus, this room is filled with weary and tired people who are being worn down and worn out with work and parenting and just plain life. And Jesus, I help them to discover their purpose and make that a priority in their lives. I just pray to give them courage to say no to all those things clamoring for their attention that don't fit their priorities. And Jesus, may they experience working in your yoke that fits them perfectly and leads to a productive life. Most of all, Jesus, give them rest for their souls, that they are living a life motivated by a love for you and their neighbors, and give each of us a productive week working with you in our daily lives. And everyone said,
Amen.
Amen.